We're in our third lesson in 2 Samuel, and as we left the last time together, the commander of Ishbosheth's army had met with the commander of David's army at the pool of Gibeon. And there they made this plan. Actually, it was Abner's idea, Joab agreed, that 12 men of the tribe of Benjamin, Saul's tribe, would face 12 men of the tribe of Judah, David's tribe, in hand-to-hand combat, whoever won, won. Whatever side won. Well, the 12 men of one side grabbed the hair of the 12 men on the other side. They stabbed their swords in their side, and all 24 men died. And as we pick up here in chapter 2, verse 18, as the writer tells us, this conflict continues. So we are now, Gad is going to introduce us to the boys of Zariah. Verse number 18. Now the three sons of Zariah were there, Joab and Abishai and Asahel. And Asahel was as swift-footed as one of the gazelles which is in the field. Now, we often think about Zariah being a man, but Zariah is not a man. Zariah was David's sister. Therefore, these three sons were nephews of David. Joab was David's commander. So remember, Zariah, every time you hear that name through the rest of 2 Samuel, it is David's sister. Well, we are told by Gad of the swiftness of Asahel. That's David's nephew also. Joab, Abishai, and Asahel. And David's nephew, they're all three David's nephews. As we pick up here in verse number 19, Asahel pursued Abner and did not turn to the right or to the left from following Abner. In this line, Gad tells us that the dominance of David's men, when they stood up to fight after the 24 had died, caused Abner and Ishbosheth's commander to run to escape, and all his army retreated and followed. Asahel followed Abner closely and quickly. And even though Asahel was determined to catch up with Abner, it did not mean that Asahel would overcome Abner. We come to the death of Asahel, verse 20. Then Abner looked behind him and said, "Is that you, Asahel?" And he answered, "It is I." So Abner said to him, "Turn to your right or to your left and take hold of one of the young men for yourselves and take for yourselves the spoil." But Asahel was not willing to turn aside from following him. Abner repeated again to Asahel, "Turn aside from following me. Why should I strike you to the ground? How then would I lift up my face to your brother Joab?" However, he refused to turn aside. Therefore, Abner struck him in the belly with the butt end of the spear, so that the spear came out of his back, and he fell there and died on the spot. And it came about that all who came to the place where Asahel had fallen and died stood still. Abner knew that Asahel was determined to kill him. Abner knew that Asahel could overcome one of those soldiers in Abner's army who was running with him. And he offered, say, "Pick any one of these soldiers that are with me and kill him and take his spoils, Asahel." But Asahel would not have any part of that. He wanted Abner. Abner killed him. He ran his sword through Asahel until the butt of the handle stopped at Asahel's belly. Then Abner left. When all of the rest of the men in pursuit of Abner arrived at the dead body of Asahel, the text tells us, Gad tells us, they stopped dead in their pursuit to be there at the dead body of Asahel. The men pursuing Abner stopped to gaze at Asahel's dead body, but his two brothers did not stop. But Joab and Abishai pursued Abner. And when the sun was going down, they came to the hill of Ammah, which is in front of Gia, by the way of the wilderness of Gibeon. The sons of Benjamin gathered together behind Abner and became one band, and they stood on the top of a certain hill. Somewhere down the road, all of the Benjamite soldiers and all of Israel assembled together with Abner as one force, one band. They stood together on the top of this hill, and this location means that Joab and Abishai by themselves were lower down in the valley, and they're looking at this army above them on this hill. With Abner and his men on the top of this hill, and Joab with his brother below, cooler heads are about to prevail. And we hear of the halt of the conflict. It came with what Abner said to Joab. Verse 26. Then Abner called to Joab and said, "Shall the sword devour forever? Do you not know that it will be bitter in the end? How long will you refrain from telling the people to turn back from following their brothers?" Abner is saying in these words to Joab that more men will die today if this conflict keeps up. Joab heard those words of Abner, and Gad recorded what Joab said in reply. Verse number 27. Joab said, "As God lives, if you had not spoken, surely then the people would have gone away in the morning, each from following his brother." So Joab blew the trumpet, and all the people halted and pursued Israel no longer, nor did they continue to fight anymore. Taking the whole conflict into context, Joab blames Abner for all the deaths that occurred that day. Abner suggested that the cruel remedy of the 24 men killing each other should have done it. With that bloodbath that happened, and that conflict escalated, and from when Joab sat at the pool with Abner and during the negotiation should have been able to settle the dispute, but it did not. Now, we must remember at this point that David would not have dared approve anything that would have ended the rule of Ishbosheth in conflict. But that was where this conflict was heading. Ishbosheth had been anointed the king of Israel, and David, because of his personality and his character, dared not touch the Lord's anointed. It was the theme of 1 Samuel. Joab knew David well. He knew his orders. If Abner had stuck to the negotiation table, all the soldiers on both sides would have safely gone home in the morning. But many were dead because of Abner. At least in Joab's mind, Joab blames Abner. No doubt, when the 24 men all fell dead, Abner called his men to attack. The conflict was halted, though. And then Gad tells us where Abner went that night in verse number 29. Abner and his men then went through the Arabah all that night. So they crossed the Jordan, walked all morning, and came to Mahanaim. Now, Ishbosheth has made Mahanaim his capital city. He is no longer using Gibeah, his father's capital city. So Abner and his men did not pause for one moment once the conflict ended at Gibeon. They took their bags and they marched down to the Jordan River that night. They marched up north the Arabah, which is on the west bank of the Jordan River, until they came to the crossing ford in the river to cross, and they made their way directly across the ford that leads directly into the Jabesh-Gilead area of Manasseh. And right across the river, not very far, across the Jordan River, is the town of Mahanaim. It took them all night and all morning. And as we are about to see next, Abner had lost 360 men that day in death. The writer concludes this part of the story by telling us where Joab went also. Verse number 30. Then Joab returned from following Abner, and when he had gathered all the people together, 19 of David's servants, besides Asahel, were missing. But the servants of David had struck down many of Benjamin and Abner's men, so that 360 men died. And they took Asahel and buried him in his father's tomb, which was in Bethlehem. Then Joab and his men went all night until the day dawned at Hebron. Of David's army, under the command of Joab, only 19 men died, not including his nephew Asahel, who Abner had killed. 12 of those men died in the senseless challenge that Abner suggested. The other 7 died in the fierce battle that ensued after the challenge. And on the way back to Hebron, Joab and the army stopped in Bethlehem to bury Asahel in the grave of Jesse, David's father. Then they marched all night to arrive in Hebron in the morning, where David was residing. Joab had a report to give David, but we are not told how David responded. But knowing David, he was going to grieve deeply. The short war between the northern tribes under Abner's control and Judah's tribe under Joab's control did not bring the war to an end in this divided kingdom. Ishbosheth was the king of 11 tribes. David was the king of 1 tribe. And the fire that was started by Abner and Joab's skirmish was not extinguished. The coals of their war were stoked and became a complete bonfire again. But in that new fiery war, the development in the kingdom continued, and David would increase. Ishbosheth would decrease. In the opening of chapter 3, verse 1, it tells us how David's power increased. Now there was a long war between the house of Saul and the house of David, and David grew steadily stronger, and the house of Saul drew weaker continually. Our writer, Gad, gives us this short sentence as a summary of the hostile state of the relationship between the northern tribes and Judah. We have to wonder about Saul's old kingdom now in the hands of Ishbosheth. To our knowledge, he had never led one thing. He ended up being the king by default because he was the last sole surviving son of Saul. It was Jonathan who was supposed to lead the north to great heights. He was a proven warrior, he was a proven leader, and he had died when his father died. And no doubt, time was on David's side. He was a proven leader, David was, and David was a proven warrior. And David knew that when you go out to fight, he knew when to do that, and he also knew when to wait. Time to fight, let's fight. No, not time to fight, let's wait. And wait he should for the promise of the Lord that he would eventually be the king of all of Israel. Now, if we move back in this story to when David was still in Ziklag, we discovered in 1 Chronicles 12, verses 20 through 22, that 6 captains of the tribe of Manasseh had already defected to David from the northern tribes during the time that Saul was king. These 6 were captains over thousands, and they helped David and his band of 600 men with their families through those early 2 years. The Chronicles passage ends by telling us this: for day by day, men came to David to help him until there was a great army like the army of God. 1 Chronicles 12:22. Time was on David's side. Each day, more and more men defected to the army of David, leaving the army of Ishbosheth. How many left the north daily to join David's increase in Hebron? 1 Chronicles 12:23 through 40 tells us that answer. all totaled from that passage, 1 Chronicles 12, 23 through 40, tells us that from the northern tribes, catch this number, 333,400 warrior men defected from Ishbosheth and moved to Hebron with the intent of making David king over all of Israel. Wow! More than a third of a million men defected from the north to David. David started his kingdom with 6,800 warriors, the 600 original men, plus others who had defected whenever immediately when Saul had died. But 2 years later, he had more than a third of a million men. Well, our author Gad also gives us now a summary of David's posterity and how his personal life increases. Not only does his kingdom increase, but now his personal life increases also. And so we're in chapter 3, verse 2. Sons were born to David at Hebron. His first son was Amnon by Ahinoam the Jezreelite, and his second son, Chileb, by Abigail, the widow of Nabal the Carmelite, and the third, Absalom, the son of Maacah, the daughter of Talmai, the king of Gershon, and the fourth, Adonijah, the son of Haggith, and the fifth, Shephatiah, the son of Abital, and the sixth, Ithream, by David's wife Eglah. These were born to David in Hebron. So here Gad introduces us to David's first six sons, each one born to six of David's wives, For clarity, the six sons were in order of their birth were Amnon, Chileah, Absalom, Adonijah, Shephatiah, and Ithream. The six wives who bore David these sons were Ahinoam, Abigail, Maacah, Haggith, Abital, and Eglah. These sons were born to David during his 7 years in Hebron. So here is an interesting point. None of these sons are over 7 years old. This summary proves that the book of 2 Samuel was written well after the events in this part of the book were told, actually occurred, I should say. In the storyline, we are still in David's first 2 years as king. But Gad has told us about the first 7 years while he's at Hebron. So we know that this chronicle is being written after the fact. The writer tells us how David's politics also increased. His kingdom has increased, his family has increased, and his politics increased because of the actions of Abner in the north. We are told of Abner's arrogance in the north. Remember, he's the commander of Ishbosheth. He, as we may remember, was the cousin of dead King Saul and the commander of his armies. And we see this in verse number 6, what he does. And it came about while there was war between the house of Saul and the house of David that Abner was making himself strong in the house of Saul. Now Saul had a concubine whose name was Rizbah, the daughter of Ai. And Ishbosheth said to Abner, "Why have you gone in to my father's concubine?" Then Abner was very angry over the words of Ishbosheth and said, "Am I a dog's head that belongs to Judah? Today I show kindness to the house of Saul, your father, to his brothers and to his friends, and have not delivered you into the hands of David, And yet today you charge me with a guilt concerning a woman? May God do so to Abner, and more also, if as the Lord has sworn to David, I do not accomplish this for him, to transfer the kingdom from the house of Saul and to establish the throne of David over Israel and over Judah from Dan even to Beersheba. And he could no longer answer Abner a word because he was afraid of him. Abner, as the commander of the northern armies, was taking advantage of his position and his prosperity in all things. Simply put, he was a snide. A snide is a person who does devious and underhanded things in their position of power. The people appointed Ish-bosheth as their king. But his commander undermined the king's kingdom and the king's family. We have all known people who are like Abner. At first, we don't recognize that everything they do is for their own personal gain rather than the good of the people that they are around. But even at first, the Holy Spirit tells us that there's just something wrong with their motives. We all must trust people to help us. And we all place people in power positions when we need their help. And for the most part, those people help without personal desires. And they do not take advantage of us. And they are not snides. Yet, some snides like Abner take every opportunity to undermine authorities above them and take advantage of their positions of power. I know two men whom I have worked with for over 30 years. And throughout those years, I always felt something was just wrong with their intentions. They were in power positions, but it just always seemed to, they seemed to be conniving for personal gain. And yes, they would do some good things, but there was always just this bad twist to everything. And in the end, in the last 2 years of me serving with them, my suspicions were proven true. From the outset of Abner's coming on the scene in 1 Samuel, something seemed wrong with Abner too. Here Abner shows his true colors. He, in his arrogance, took advantage of Ish-bosheth and the death of Saul. Abner undermined Ish-bosheth by supposing himself to be the true power behind the king, just as snides do. However, in the culture, remember the king's property always became the property of the successor king. In this king case, I should say, the harem of Saul became the harem of Ish-bosheth. If anyone was supposed to take one of the king's wives, that person was advancing the pretension of the crown. This point comes out later in the book of 1 Kings when Adonijah has Bathsheba ask Solomon for the last concubine wife of David. Adonijah was executed for his snide attempt. That's in 1 Kings chapter 2 verses 13 through 18. Abner was absolutely incensed by Ish-bosheth's question about his relationship with Rizpah, Saul's concubine. Abner decided to remove Ish-bosheth's kingdom from him. Abner thought he had the power to do so, and Abner had put on put Ish-bosheth on the throne, but he is now going to transfer that throne to David. Abner's threat struck fear in Ish-bosheth, and rightly so. Abner was a snide and an evil killer. Ish-bosheth had every right to be afraid. Then Abner sent messengers to David in his place, saying, "Whose is the land? Make your covenant with me, and behold, my hand shall be with you to bring all Israel over to you." It is interesting. Abner thought that the land in the north belonged to him. He was not the king. But Abner thought, "Hey, I will send a messenger. But Abner did not go himself. That's interesting too. Abner undoubtedly realized that he could not be a snide with David because of Joab, and that he would have a conflict with Joab, who he had already faced before. Abner is offering David what he does not own to give to David. He is presumptuous. Nevertheless, Abner has opened up a conversation with David, and David uses it to reclaim his property that is still in the north. He said, "Good, I will make a covenant with you, but I demand one thing of you, namely, you shall not see my face unless you first bring Michal, daughter Saul, when you come to see me." So David sent messengers to Ishbosheth, Saul's son, saying, "Give me my wife Michal, to whom I was betrothed, for 100 foreskins of Philistines." Ishbosheth sent and took her from her husband, from Palatil, the son of Laish. But her husband went with her, weeping as he went, and followed her as far as Bahurim. Then Abner said to him, "Go, return." So he returned. Now, if you remember, Michal, the daughter of Saul, loved David and had devised a plan for David's escape from Gibeah when Saul sent men to get him from his home. And at that time, Michal was the only wife of David. If our calculation is correct, Michal and David, when he slipped out of the window, had not seen each other in more than 3 years at this point in the story. And in addition, unless David saw Michal at the funeral of Samuel, which is doubtful, David had not seen Michal since he slipped out of the house, out the window, on that fateful night 3 years before. In the meantime, Saul had taken Michal and given her to Palatil for a wife. But according to the Levitical law, Michal was David's first wife, and he had not divorced her. Therefore, he had the right to make this claim.